And good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show here with myself, Julie Calamine. And our guest this morning is Kenan McClintock of the Nature Conservancy. Good morning, Kenan.
Good morning, Julie.
Well, it's so good to have you here on this rather rainy day in middle of October. And before we begin our interview, I'll just talk a bit more about the weather. Well, there's not that much to really talk about because from today until, I would say, the end of the week, it's looking like kind of gloomy, cloudy weather. Highs in the middle 40s, lows at night in the middle 30s, and a chance of rain just about every day. So I wouldn't plan on taking out your hot air balloon or anything this week. Well, going on over what's been happening in the last week, we've got folks out hunting and hiking and trying to make the best of the weather. I know the elk season is well underway. People are getting out looking for mushrooms. It's still a good time to be out and about, closing up gardens. Kenan, are you a gardener? Are you out working in your yard?
I work in the woods, but my wife gardens a lot.
Yeah, good. So you're getting out in the forest anyway. Very good. Well, let's just go ahead and start learning about you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Kenan, what your job title is, how you came to be at the Nature Conservancy?
Well, thank you, Julie. My name is Kenan McClintock, and I work at the Nature Conservancy, and my office is in Moyet Springs, Idaho, which is up north, east of Bonner's Ferry. My training and education is in forestry, and I attended the University of Montana and graduated from there in forest management and worked in Libby, Montana for many years as a forester, and then moved to Idaho in the mid-80s and continue to work as a forester, silviculturist here over in Idaho, and have been in Moyet since then, since 1987. I retired actually in 2010 after 34 years working in the woods and decided to entertain a job with the Nature Conservancy. And my interest with the Nature Conservancy had been I'd worked with them in the past as a forester, lands that I had taken care of. They worked on conservation easements on those lands to protect them and keep them as working forest. And so I had that chance to be on the other side of the fence watching the Nature Conservancy do their work, and I was very impressed by how they did their work. They were very community-oriented. They were very focused on relationships and doing the right thing for the land and the people and the communities. And so when I retired and they offered, they had a position open in Boundary County, I decided I would try that for a while, and that's how I ended up here.
Yeah, I believe that's a theme that'll be running through our conversation, the fact that Nature Conservancy draws on folks from a lot of areas and know about other groups, private, public, governmental, all working together to accomplish a really great goal, right?
That's correct.
Right.
They go out of their way to build relationships and to work on those for the long term. And, you know, they're very well known in Boundary County after, well, probably 16, 17 years since they really started working up there. In the commissioners, the legislatures, the community knows the Nature Conservancy, trust what they do. The one thing I personally like about the Nature Conservancy is that we don't spend time in the courts. We don't litigate issues. We don't try to stop things. We try to work with people and communities on conservation efforts.
That's really wonderful. Let's back up just a minute and talk about a little bit more about the big picture of the Nature Conservancy. We've touched on its mission, but can you tell us a little bit more about what is Nature Conservancy all about? It's all over the place. It's not just here in Idaho.
Yes, the Nature Conservancy is one of the largest conservation organizations in the United States and in the world, probably. It was founded in 1951 in the United States. The Idaho chapter was founded in 1965. So our 50th anniversary was last year in Idaho here. It also operates in 60-some countries in the world. The head office is over in the Washington office is in Virginia. And it's just a huge outfit. The mission, I can just read that here, the mission of the Nature Conservancy is to conserve the lands and waters on which all life depends. And our vision is a world where the diversity of life thrives and people act to conserve nature for its own sake and its ability to fulfill our needs and enrich our lives. So it's got a very broad mission and vision, but also very focused and, yeah, and that's it.
Right. And it is broad, and it gives us a general idea of where the Nature Conservancy is going. But something that I think it doesn't touch on, but we're going to get to again, is that cooperative quality of Nature Conservancy, which I think is a little different than some other organizations that we know about. Sets you apart. Yeah. Well, we've talked about how large the organization is, but let's deal a little bit more about that. I mean, it's not just a few people here, a few people there. It's literally hundreds and hundreds of people throughout the world, isn't it?
Yeah, I would guess the Nature Conservancy has tens of thousands of employees. There's a chapter in every state, so we have 50 chapters of the Nature Conservancy. Going from, Idaho is fairly small. We have about 27 staff people here in Idaho, with our head office is in Haley, Idaho, and we have an office in Boise as well. To California, who has probably hundreds of employees, would be my guess. So there's tens of thousands of employees throughout the Nature Conservancy's organization.
I understand you're the only guy up there in Boundary County, though. Is it a little lonely?
Yeah, I always like to work alone, so it's not lonely. Being alone and lonely are two different things.
Well, that's for sure.
But yeah, we have most of our staff works out of Haley and Boise and in South Idaho. And the focus there is working on salmon and water issues, sage grouse issues. In North Idaho, we have my boss, Robin Miller, works out of the Moscow office, and there's one person there. And I work out of my home in Moy Springs. We really have two people in North Idaho, and the other 25 people are all pretty much in South Idaho.
But focusing when needed on the northern, but of course working on the southern.
Right.
Well, very good. And volunteers, do you have any volunteers up here?
I do. I have one that we have two preserves up here. We have one in Cougar Bay, which we've owned since 1988. And most people have driven by that. If you go south of Coeur d'Alene on I-95 heading to Moscow, the Cougar Bay Preserve will be on the east, on the left. And so I have one volunteer that takes care of that for me. She's a young lady, about 65 or so. And she's just very energetic, and she walks the trails down there, and she cleans up trash, and she helps people with questions, and she just keeps everything tidy and clean down there for me. She does an excellent job. The Ball Creek Preserve, which is a working farm that we own in Boundary County, north of Bonners Ferry on the west side of the valley, is a 2,400-acre working farm. And we lease that out and for commercial grain production for the most part, and we have no volunteers there.
Well, now, wait a minute. You're the Nature Conservancy. You're conserving land, and you're telling me you've got a working ranch. Let's talk about that a little more. I think that delves into what the Nature Conservancy is all about.
Right. So it's not a ranch. It's a farm. ranch would mean cows. We do have some cows on there. Mostly it's a big farm. And it's fairly unique how that came to be. That was that was put up for sale in 2000. And this is really when the Nature Conservancy had a presence in Coeur d'Alene, but probably not many other places in North Idaho. And this farm came for sale, and it was, it could easily have been subdivided and broken up into parcels. And so the Nature Conservancy thought, you know what, we should buy that and keep that intact and non-fragmented. So they bought this 2,400-acre farm, and we run that as that helps us fund our conservation efforts up in northern Idaho. We lease that out. We farm about 1,200 acres of it, with mostly wheat, canola, timothy, some alfalfa. So this year we're trying garbanzo beans and also sunflowers. So it's a working farm. Revenues go to help our efforts, conservation efforts up here. We also, this was before I worked for them in 2002, they restored 550 acres up there. This is all valley ground, and they put this back into wetlands. So we have a huge wetlands up there, probably the largest in the county there, that we manage as a wetlands for waterfowl and other animals, wildlife, a lot of moose and animals.
Okay. Is this typical of Nature Conservancy? Is that, would you say this is kind of something that they're looking to do, own farms, things like this, or did this just happen along the way?
Yeah, that's a great question, Julie. This really just happened. We do have preserves all through Idaho that are used to protect sensitive areas. This is probably the only working farm that we have in Idaho. I'm not sure about the other states, how they handle certain areas like that. But it just happened that way, and it's been such a good thing for the Nature Conservancy. We've held on to it for, you know, since 2000, since we owned it, since we bought it.
Well, sure. I'm understanding that the mission is to look for protected places for species that are going to be needing extra help, and so I understand you're looking for things, areas like that, and I guess I'd like to delve into just how the Nature Conservancy focuses in on those places and how you decide which places are important enough that you need to get involved.
That's okay. That's a great question. So I'm going to say, and you know, I started in 2011, but I'm going to say in the 2000s, the Nature Conservancy worked all through Idaho. And at some point in time, they decided that they were just spread out too thin. They were covering lots of area, but they were just too thin. They didn't have the manpower or the funding to do all the work they wanted to do. And at that point in time, they decided to scale back and look at be very focused on certain areas, which they call priority conservation areas. And so Boundary County is one of those. The Clearwater Basin is one of those. The Greater Yellowstone Area, Hell's Canyon, the Owyhees, Silver Creek down by Haley and Ketchum, and the Upper Salmon region are the seven project areas that we really focus on in the state. So where we used to have a presence in Coeur d'Alene, we really are not focused in that area very much anymore. Mostly it's all going to be in Boundary County and then in the other six areas that I mentioned. And that's been working very well because I think we get better work done on areas that are very unique areas. There's other land trust organizations that work in Sandpoint, that work in Coeur d'Alene, that we work with as well, that handles other areas. So we really aren't stepping on other people's toes, and we're not crossing over boundaries very much. But those are our areas that we work in now.
Sure. And I would think that you'd be happy to have other organizations wanting to preserve land that you're wanting to preserve so that it, you know, I would think the more the better.
Right. And we work, you know, there's the Kinnexu Land Trust is down here in Coeur d'Alene or in Sandpoint. The Inland Northwest Land Trust is out of Spokane that takes care of the Kootenai County. And we work closely with both of those on several things, at least talk to them on what they're doing. And they know what we're doing. Y2Y, the Yellowstone to Yukon Initiative, based out of BC, is also very active. They do fairly the same thing that we do in Idaho, but they work in a large area. And they have sub areas broken down in that whole area. And we work in one of those little areas that they would define. I'm not sure what they call that area, but it's basically the Selkirk Purcell region up there in Boundary County.
Okay. And as you said, I imagine a lot of it just centers around relationships and funding. And again, wondering who would be the big gorilla in the room of conservation groups? Is it you all? Do you have the most ability to preserve land or? Are you guys the big ones in the whole world? Or?
I couldn't answer that. I would say that, you know, we're so specialized in certain areas that we probably are. In certain areas in Idaho, we are the conservation group that's doing the most work. But I would say down here, the Kinnexu Land Trust does a lot of work in the Clark Fork area. Inland Northwest Land Trust does lots of area work in the Rathdrum Prairie, in the Coeur d'Alene area, in the Spokane area. So it just depends on the area, I would say. We're just very focused in certain areas in Idaho right now.
And, I can't believe I used gorilla as the biggest gorilla in the room. I should have been saying grizzly. Let's talk a little bit about just, again, how we're focusing. And it's around plants and animals a lot of times and habitat, I suppose.
That's correct. And need and risk. And so in the Boundary County area, you know, we have, it's probably one county in the whole United States that has more endangered species than any place else in the country.
Boundary County.
Yeah, between the grizzly bear, caribou, wolverine, wolf, sturgeon, burbot, lynx, it goes on and on. So there's a lot of wildlife up in that area, and it's also joined into Canada. So Canada also has all those animals. So our goal up there is to try to conserve areas, mostly private lands. We don't really deal with federal or state lands. We work on private lands, trying to keep those lands intact, keep them unfragmented, keep them from being commercially developed, continue to have the traditional uses that they've always had as forest land, timber harvesting, as ag land, like the Ball Creek Farm, or as other traditional uses. Those are fine. But we try to keep big chunks of land intact with conservation easements so that they will provide wildlife habitat and they will provide clean water in the future.
That's pretty much what it's all about, isn't it? Getting enough land preserved so that animals can move around on it.
Right. And it's not, it's, you know, it's, we work with people on the ground, people that want to, I mean, we don't go out and push this on people. People come to us and say, we would like to keep our land together. I'm 75 years old. I have 160 acres. You know, can you help me out and keeping my land together in the future? You know, a lot of people, their kids aren't interested in the land. A conservation easement fits well for successional planning so that, you know, their wishes, the owner's wishes will go on into the future.
That's leading us into an interesting part of Nature Conservancy. And I think what you've told me is the bulk of your work. And you just used the word conservation easement. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So a conservation easement, it's a voluntary legal agreement between a landowner and a land trust, which is the Nature Conservancy is a land trust, or a government agency can also have a hold conservation easements, but it permanently limits the use of the land in order to protect its conservation values. And so the conservation values in the case of Boundary County would be working forest, working farms, wildlife habitat, open space, water quality. Those things are values that we need to be thinking about to conserve and keeping intact in perpetuity. And that's what our conservation easements focus on, is keeping, you know, mostly, the, I mean, 80-90% of a conservation easement is keeping a large chunk of land together. So when it is sold, it always will be sold as one chunk. And also limiting commercial development. Now, there is some commercial development that is allowed, but for the most part, we're not going to put a golf course on one of these pieces of property. We're not going to put a Home Depot on there. Those are things that would not be allowed on a conservation. But timber harvesting, livestock production, agricultural production, nursery production, vineyards, gardens, those are all excellent uses for conservation easements.
I'd like you to walk me through an example, not a particular person with a name and phone number, but just take me from the beginning. Someone contacts you, they have a large parcel of land and they're worried about it being subdivided and they call you all. What happens?
Right. So I have perfect examples of those. One owner up north, he's elderly. He has several kids that live out of the area. He's got a beautiful 160 acres along the Kootenai River, very high-valued piece of property. He does not want it to be subdivided, does not want it to be turned into little ranchettes and weed fields, which usually what happens. So he wants to keep that intact, and so he comes to us and say, how can you help me? How can we do something here to keep this land in perpetuity as my 160 acres and you know, he has 100 acres of forest and 60 acres of ag land there. And so we talk about conservation easements. Okay, we'll put an easement on that. And in this case, he donated the easement to us, which basically said, I will give you this easement.
Do folks sometimes get paid for those easements?
Sometimes they do, yeah. Mm-hmm. If we do pay for easements as well, and that's a whole, we can talk about how that works too, but getting back to the fundamentals of a conservation easement. So we would work out the particulars of a conservation easement. Basically, his desires and wishes, like, you know, what do you want to do with the ag? What do you want to do with the timberlands? You know, and usually it's, I want to continue to, you know, sustainable management of both my farms and my forest land. And he can put stipulations on there. He can have one house or two house or three house sites. He has to decide that. So what the owner wishes are put into the easement. And then that's recorded with the courthouse. And a conservation easement basically goes with the land. So when it is sold, or if his daughters were to take it over, whatever was to happen there, that easement would always be on the land.
So it's in perpetuity, and does it really work? Do they really stay on? It can't be changed, you're saying. It's really going to stay that way forever.
That's right. They can be changed very rarely. There are some conditions that change it. But for the most part, it will be that way always. And the holder of the conservation easement, whether it is the Nature Conservancy or the Kinnexu Land Trust or the Inland Northwest Land Trust or the state, Idaho State holds a lot of conservation easements. They monitor every easement every year. So you go out there at least once a year, maybe twice or three times, and look at the easement and make sure that everything is in compliance.
That's great.
With the easement. So it's checked continuously. And then that is documented, and then that somehow ends up with the IRS. I can't remember how that is, but it goes to some organization that makes sure that everybody is following the same rules.
Sure. I would think monitoring would be the key part of that agreement.
Yes.
I have another question, having many years in real estate in Minnesota. And the question is, what about value? Because if I were a landowner with a lot of land, and I was about to give away my conservation easement or donate it to you all, and my kids were maybe be asking about it, I'd be wanting to know, does it affect value somewhat?
It does. So yeah. if you Julie had 160 acres, and let's say it was worth $200,000, and if you were to donate or if we were to appraise the conservation easement, it might be worth $60,000 or $70,000. It would devalue your property considerably.
Sure.
You still pay the same taxes. It doesn't affect your tax base. It would just affect the selling value when you go to sell the property. Mm-hmm. Now, the interesting thing about that is that when you put a conservation easement on your property, it actually raises generally the land values around your property.
I would see how that could happen. Wouldn't that be a wonderful neighbor to have a conservation easement? Yeah, I can see that. So it's some people that have pretty strong feelings and values about the environment that are thinking about working with you on these projects. Would have to think. So let's go ahead and move on to projects that you're actually working on. I know that we've touched on the Ball Creek Ranch, and I know that you spent a lot of time securing conservation easements. Is there something really interesting? Do you have an interesting project you're working on now that you can talk about, or is it hush-hush until things get signed off and taken care of?
No, actually, I can talk about any project. Most of our projects are all usually when we work in Boundary County, we usually talk to the county commissioners and also the local resource collaborative up there, the KVRI board, and tell them what we're doing. And we work very closely with the community members up there and the leaders so they understand what we're working with. And that's how the Nature Conservancy works. So most of the easements that I'm currently working on and have worked on are well known in the community. One of the interesting ones we're working on now is just up at MacArthur Lake, and people know that you drive from Bonners to Sandpoint, you go past MacArthur Lake, and that always has been that is the narrowest place between the Selkirk Mountains and the Cabinet Mountains to the east, where that valley comes together there, and so that is a natural travel corridor for wildlife. And so since 2010, easements have been being placed on the private lands, mostly industrial timberlands in this case, on the west and the east side of MacArthur Lake. And those have all been purchased and easements placed on those. And so those lands are now will always be working for us. They will never be subdivided. They won't have any kind of development on them, but they will always be available for timber management, forest management, and harvesting. But anyways, we're just finishing up the one on the east side of the lake right now. We had just recently finalized an easement with one landowner there who had 5,500 acres. We've been working on that for 6 years. It takes a long time to get these in place, but yeah, it's 5,500 acres on the east side of the lake. In 2010, Forest Capital, who was a large industrial landowner who no longer is in, they've sold out here, but they put 4,000 acres on the west side into conservation easement. And Stimson Lumber Company, who also is a large landowner in all of North Idaho, has put in another 6,000 acres on the west side of MacArthur Lake. So there's lots of easements there. that will always keep that land as working forest land, but that makes it available for wildlife. And it keeps the water quality in excellent shape. And that's kind of what the Nature Conservancy looks for.
That's right. And I'm hearing names like Stimson Lumber. I'm hearing companies that I wouldn't maybe traditionally think would be wanting to, you know, be like an environmental. I wouldn't think of them in the same category as like, I don't even know, maybe like solar roadways. So what I'm trying to get to is that's pretty neat that you're able to cooperate with companies that are a little more traditionally conservative, and I wouldn't maybe expect them to want to give away their rights. So how does that come about? How are you able to do that?
Well, we don't work directly with Stimson, but another land trust does.
I see.
But Stimson is a family-owned company out of Oregon. They have several hundred thousand acres in Idaho, eastern Washington, western Montana. And they have a lot of conservation easements on their property.
Wonderful.
And they are very environmentally sound. And their business model is to grow trees and to supply raw material to their mills and to the other local mills, the regional mills as well, for the forest products industry. And a conservation easement works very well because that takes away, they get paid for the value of their development rights for the most part. That's
sure.
What a conservation easement is removing the development rights off the land value. And then they can focus on just growing trees and managing their forest lands. And of course, the benefit for the public of that is, first off, you have beautiful aesthetics and open area forever on those forest lands. You have jobs that are created from not only managing the forest lands, but harvesting them and the manufacturing of lumber and forest products, paper as well. And then those forests produce clean water. You know, you have forest land, water starts up in the mountains, comes through there, and those lands produce clean water that come all the way down to the valley, so the water stays clean. And because the land all stays intact, the wildlife habitat always stays intact as well.
Right, not
and
disturbed.
So a huge public benefit. And Stimson also allows public access to their property, which is another big issue. You know, public, they're private lands, but they allow public access, and those usually are written into the conservation easements where they are allowed public access. It might not be motorized, it might be walk-in only, but still public can use the land for huckleberry picking, hunting, et cetera, firewood getting.
Sure, what a win-win.
It is.
And are there specific species that we're trying to protect when we're in northern Idaho? I think you mentioned it was sage grouse. Was it sage grouse in southern and southern?
Yes, sage grouse and salmon are the big topics down south.
Okay. What's up here?
We don't deal with those. Up here, you know, we deal, you know, the endangered species that we have, I think I've already talked about.
Yes, the grizzlies.
Grizzlies and the wolverines. Mm-hmm. Caribou, etc. But mostly, you know, it's just wildlife habitat for all animals, giving them the room they need to live and also to move between the Selkirks and the Purcells and the Cabinets and then back again. They need corridors of sorts of open area and of unfettered land that they can move through without being stopped. And so, you know, making these corridors by trying to preserve or not, you know, conserve these large chunks of forest land and farmland as well, keeping them open, using them as traditional values, traditional work, you know, either working forests or working farms, that keeps the wildlife habitat in place and those corridors in place.
That's right, corridors. There are lots of items that you've got to look at when selecting land you're interested in. So at some point you must be measuring success. And how does one go about measuring your results with projects like this?
I would say it various ways. You know, certainly when we are able to secure a conservation easement on a piece of ground, that is a success. We work in certain areas where, you know, there's more wildlife corridor activity than other places. And so that would be a higher success if we were able to secure easements in those areas, kind of like at MacArthur Lake. That's a big win when those areas have conservation easements on them.
It's not obviously just how many acres you can secure. It's really more about
the quality of the land. Yeah, with the location, you know, location, location, location in real estate,
there
as you
go.
Well know. But it's also a community acceptance of what we're doing. And I think we have that in a lot of places in Boundary County because people understand that we are keeping lands together, keeping those jobs out there in the woods and in the mills, because it provides certainty to the mill owners and to our farms. It's good for our economy and our community. I think when we have acceptance by the community, I think that's a success as well.
I agree. Well, Kenan, I think it's time for us to take a short music break and give everyone a chance to go get a cup of coffee. Let's listen to a tune by Greg Brown. It's Boomtown. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the future of Nature Conservancy, opportunities, how a person can volunteer, things like that. Okay, and you just heard Boomtown by Greg Brown, and hopefully we're not in a boomtown up in Boundary County because we want those little critters to have some place to run around. For those of you who are just joining us, you are listening to 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho, and our guest on the Tuesday morning show is Kenan McClintock, working with the Nature Conservancy. So we've covered a lot, Kenan, but I think I'd like to talk with you about where is the money coming from? It's always a question for nonprofits, and I imagine it's a big question with an organization as large as the Nature Conservancy.
Yes, thanks, Julie. So our funding for our programs that we work on are, you know, as I talked of Ball Creek Farm, we produce some revenue there that funds some of our work up here in North Idaho. Half of the funding for Nature Conservancy comes from private donors, not only in the state, but throughout the whole U.S. And we have fundraisers in our office in Haley and Boise that solicits funds from donors. We also work with, there are federal funds available for conservation efforts. So the Land and Water Conservation Fund is a national fund that we draw out of, and those are competitive grants that you apply for, and if you're lucky and are awarded those grants, then that money can be used for conservation. So a big part of my work in North Idaho is the Forest Legacy Program, which is a state program, which is run by the Idaho Department of Lands and overseen by the IDL. And they use money from the Land and Water Conservation Funds to help us purchase easements on private lands, working farms and working forests. Most of that funding comes from oil and gas royalties offshore. That's what funds, that's not taxpayers' money, just to be clear on that, because some people think that's the case and that's not so. So that's funding. Funding's always a challenge. You have to be very creative when you're a nonprofit like the Nature Conservancy. When I come from an industrial background for decades, and I'm used to making my money and budgeting and spending money. I'm not used to asking for money, so it's really difficult for me.
It is hard. We're volunteer too, of course, here at the radio station, and it's a little different mindset, isn't it?
It is.
To get used to. Yeah. Are most of the donors, I know you've given me a good idea, but are the ones that you're working with, are they the smaller individuals giving you a few dollars here or there, or more the larger ones you're working on?
Well, usually, we have both. We have a membership, so you have an annual membership, which is a small donor, and people give extra money there. But we have large donors as well that are very passionate about conservation in Idaho, in the Northwest, in the U.S. It's surprising how some people are very focused on certain areas in the country, and they might be just really focused on this county in Idaho, and they give money for that. It's very interesting that way.
Right. It's just got to come from all over the place, doesn't it?
It does. That's correct.
So volunteers, I know, are part of the equation, and donations, fundraising, things like that. But you've also got to have employees and people joining Nature Conservancy that might want to work there. And as I was looking at your website earlier today, I noticed that there are jobs all over the world. People are working all over the world for you all.
Right. There's Nature Conservancy, if you're inclined to do that kind of work, conservation work, there are jobs everywhere in the Nature Conservancy. We have 27 staff people here in Idaho. I'm going to say 3 or 4 of those are new last year alone. There's some turnover there. but just opportunity and all across the United States working for the Nature Conservancy, there's lots of jobs there.
Is everybody a scientist, or are there jobs that aren't just for scientists?
They're a little bit of every. You know, if you're not, you can be a scientist, you can be, I'm a forester, you know, some kind of professional. We have business managers, accountants, we have fundraisers. I mean, just a little, it's a business for the most part, raising
sure.
money and then implementing projects on the ground, conservation projects on the ground.
And I noticed that there are positions for interns too. And does it happen that young folks will be an intern and work their way into a job?
We have several internships down south, Idaho, at Silver Creek, which is one of our big preserves down there. They have interns every year down there. And many of those folks go on to work for the Nature Conservancy in other states and in this state. So it's kind of a neat project. I don't have the, we don't have the manpower up here to do that, to oversee that. And we don't have a lot of volunteers up here, but I do have the one volunteer at Cougar Bay. There's more opportunity, more infrastructure, I would say, down in the south part of Idaho.
Sure. Yeah. As time goes by and as you're securing more and more conservation easements, do you see things changing in this area? Will there be more folks working, or is it just really a project of securing land and letting it do what it does?
Yeah, I think that's our focus right now is conservation easements on larger properties, ag ground and forest land. And I think that'll just be a slow, steady progression. You know, like once again, work with the community for the acceptance and also for them to understand what we do and why we're doing it. And it's just a slow, steady progress is what I would say.
But so beneficial when you think about it. You guys are really setting aside some land that's going to be for that plants, animals forever.
Yeah. And it's good for the community and our economy as well.
Yeah.
It keeps those resource lands working. And, you know, if people use the forest land like they do for recreation, you're going to continue to be able to use those lands forever that way. So it's kind of neat.
That's right. What would northern Idaho be without lots of open space and interesting animals? It would be a much different, more boring place. So we appreciate that you're making the effort.
Yep.
Well, would you like to finish up with any thoughts and give us some contact information, a website, maybe a phone number if anyone would want to ever get in touch with you?
Sure, I will. I just appreciate the opportunity, Julie, to talk to you today, so thank you. I would encourage people to go use our Cougar Bay and come up and visit the Ball Creek Farm anytime. They're open to the public, and you 7 days a week for hiking and bird watching and everything else. If you want to work, come up and join us and visit us there.
And do I need to make a call first? Is it better that I not just show up or?
No, they're just open. You can just show up and use our trails. At Cougar Bay has trail system and maps right there.
Yeah, good.
Ball Creek, you can walk around the dike. We have, like 5 miles of river frontage along the dike there. And the dike road is open for hiking and biking and horseback riding. So that's used a lot that way. So no, you don't need to call or anybody, but I will give you my phone number at my office is 267-8999. And if you had questions about the Nature Conservancy or Ball Creek or Cougar Bay, I would be happy to answer those.
Okay. And the website, if someone wanted to just learn more about Nature Conservancy?
Sure. It's www.nature.org.
That's an easy one.
Yeah. And then go to Idaho or whatever state you want to go visit. And you'll see all the preserves and what each state does with Nature Conservancy.
And are they marked with a Nature Conservancy kind of signage? Are they relatively easy to notice?
Yes, they are. Yeah, there's usually Nature Conservancy signs just about everywhere along the properties.
Yeah, I'm going to make note and get out there because I'm out a lot and I'm looking forward to seeing that one. Well, Kenan, I want to thank you for taking the time to tell us about Nature Conservancy and what you work on. I hope that folks listening today will consider volunteering or maybe donating or just checking out a project.
All right. Thanks, Julie.
Okay, so we're going to go back to another short song break and then back to talk about a very interesting event coming up at the Panada. And we're going to have Warren Zevon with Fistful of Rain. That's in honor of this kind of weather we're living with. Hey. Well, for those of you who are out in the rain, let's try and grab a hold of a fistful of sun if we can. That's what I say. Well, anyway, no sun in the forecast, but for those of you who are just joining us, we are at 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. This is Julie Calamine. I'm one of the co-hosts of the Tuesday morning show, and this morning we had a really interesting interview with Kenan McClintock. He is a field person for the Nature Conservancy in Boundary County, adjacent to us here in Bonner County, and he told us all about what's going on with the Nature Conservancy. It was really interesting. But we're not done yet, because we have another equally interesting person to tell us about an event at the Panada, and it's called Rocking for Standing Rock, and we've got Allie Thomas here to tell us about it. Good morning, Allie.
Good morning, Julie. Thank you for having me.
We're happy to have you. It's a big deal. You're doing an event with three bands, and it's going to support the folks at Standing Rock. Let's hear about that.
It's going to support my group of the Lakota, which is the Oglala Lakota, which I happen to be affiliated with, because I've been adopted by a medicine woman who lives on Pine Ridge, and her name is Darla Black.
Wonderful.
And this was just a recent thing. I've known her for about 8 years, and with my efforts of bringing supplies to Standing Rock, around September 9th, I delivered some goods that were donated generously by a bunch of people from Sandpoint and Moscow, and I took a truckload of stuff over there, and during that, I met Darla there, and she said, oh, you're adopted now. So I have this even bigger responsibility.
You're like family,
yeah.
And you want to help them out.
I do.
Well, what's happening at Standing Rock? Why is everybody there, just for those who don't know about it? Hopefully most people do.
Well, yeah, if you don't have social media, it's almost a little bit harder to know about this, because it hasn't been in the mainstream media very much. If you listen to Amy Goodman and Democracy Now!, you'll know what's going on over there. The Dakota Access Pipeline is threatening the water supply of the Standing Rock Reservation. And the Standing Rock Lakota have put out a call to all the other Lakota and even tribes as far as South America. And everyone has been showing up and standing with Standing Rock. So we're going to be rocking for Standing Rock.
All right. So let's move on. And we understand what's happening there. The Native peoples are not wanting that pipeline to go through. And then you all are going to do a concert. Is it tonight or tomorrow night?
It is tonight.
Tonight.
Yeah.
And that's, again, in support of them. And the proceeds will help feed people,
yes,
and keep them
all the
there.
Proceeds are our biggest thing that we need to get is a 12 by 20 canvas wall tent. Because it gets to about 35 below in the winter, and that can last for a week. So we need sturdier structures for them.
In the event you're still there then. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about what's happening tonight. We want to get people to turn out if they can and have some fun and support y'all. So who's playing?
Tonight the Beat Diggers are opening, and then we have the incredible Flying Dookie Brothers. And after that, we have a band called Mostly Harmless.
Okay, and they're all going to play tonight. That's
they
good.
Are. They're about 45 minutes each. And we're starting the event early so that people with children can come.
And when is that then?
It starts at 6:30, and the doors open at 6 p.m. We also have a silent auction, and all the proceeds from that will go to buying the big canvas wall tent and all the other winter supplies that they need. Sub-Zero sleeping bags, cots, a little propane heaters, and such as that.
And do you want to tell us how folks are able to donate? How's it working? How do they help you out there?
We're asking for a suggested donation of $10 at the door. That doesn't mean you have to pay $10. If you have a dollar, you should just come. If you have no dollars, you should still come and enjoy the music. If you have more than $10 and you would like to donate more, that's totally fine with us.
All right. And that's just, again, going to go to supplies and food and that sort of situation.
Mm-hmm. It's mostly for winterizing, because they don't believe that they're going to be going anywhere anytime soon.
Okay. Well, that's a pretty important thing. I'm glad you all are doing that. And I think it's a great reason to get out on a gloomy Tuesday evening for a good cause. Well, it sounds good, Allie. Thank you for telling us about it. And everyone listening, try and get on over there tonight.
Thank you for having me, Julie.
You bet. You have a great afternoon.
Thank you.
All right. And as we're winding up the morning show, I'm just going to mention a couple of other very important things we should be thinking about. If you are heading for the Panada, and on your way, you want to get online on your computer, you can go ahead and do some bidding for good, and that would be for the station, 88.5 KRFY, our station, bidding for good. And I'm just going to mention a couple of the items that you might be able to bid on because they're pretty neat. You might bid on a 2017 preseason Seahawks ticket, and that has a room at the Seattle W Hotel, pretty fancy. If you're interested in a warmer type of vacation, there'll be a tropic island condo. There are sailboat excursions, fine dining, flowers, event tickets. There's even a Schweitzer condo and bottles of fine wine. So whether you've already donated to bidding for good, or if you'd just like to support the radio station by bidding on something, would appreciate it if you go to www.biddingforgood.com/KRFY. And I'd also like to mention our upcoming morning shows, because they're important and you're going to want to listen. So this Thursday, please join KRFY morning host Chris Bessler, and his show will be The Local Decision 2016. You've been hearing that throughout the fall. The invited guests this week are candidates for District 1, House Seat B. That is Sage Dixon and Stephen F. Howlett. Tune in to hear their stand on important issues. Again, that's tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., 88.5. And then Thursday morning, tune in for the morning show, and that will be with host Jack Peterson. His guest will be Cindy Marks from Community Cancer Services, and that'll again be tomorrow or Thursday morning at 8 a.m. And next Tuesday, I hope you're all listening for this because it's going to be good, plan to join Phil and me again next Tuesday for the Wildlife Ungulate Rescue Specialist. That's Dory from the, actually, Hooved Animal. I'm being fancy when I say ungulate, but she is going to talk to us about all the rescued deer, elk, moose, etc. So that should be a great show. I'm interested in hearing that. And because we're running just a little bit short on time, I'm only going to mention one or two upcoming events and then out with a song. So for those of you who are still thinking gardening, on the 19th, you can sit in and listen to Planning Your Home Orchard. That's by popular demand. It's a class on planning your home orchard. It's been added to the fall calendar of home horticulture classes presented by the Bonner County Gardeners Association. And this class will be held from 6 until 8 p.m. It's in the Pondre Event Center. That's at 401 Bonner Mall Way. That's taught by Arthur Church, and it covers ground preparation, planting techniques, varieties of fruit that are well adapted to our challenging climate. So for more info on that, to register, you can go to bcgardeners.org. And the last one I'll mention is on the 22nd. It's Native Plants of the Palouse. The Kinnikinnick Native Plant Society and Sandpoint Parks and Rec present Native Plants of the Palouse, Their Uses in Landscaping. And that's going to be from 9:45 a.m. until 11:30 a.m. And that's at the Sandpoint Community Hall. So if you want to know more about that, go to nativeplantsociety.org. Well, that wraps it up for our morning show, and I hope everyone enjoyed our two guests we had. And we're going to take us out with Willie Nelson, Raining in My Heart. You can see I'm really getting sick of rain. So hopefully it'll be sunny when I talk next week.